This is Dana Monsees, the nutritionist and Whole30 certified coach behind Real Food with Dana, and you're listening to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. All right, I hope you guys are excited because this week's podcast topic is going to be food freedom, and we are going to get deep and sweaty and dive into the pool of details of how to find your food freedom. So you've done the Whole 30. Well, now what? This is where food freedom comes in, and this is where a lot of the freak out comes in for a lot of people. They've done the Whole 30 and they're feeling really great, and now they're like, oh my God, what am I going to do? What is this elusive food freedom thing, and how am I actually going to get there? So it is worth saying that from my first Whole 30, it took me 5 years and multiple Whole 30s to get to where I am today with food freedom. It does not happen after one or two or even three Whole 30s. And you're going to learn a lot with each Whole 30 you do, but not everything will be perfect in Food Freedom Land after your first one, or your second one, or your third one, honestly. You're probably going to struggle through reintroduction, and you're going to struggle through food freedom too. But the important thing to remember here is no one can teach you those lessons on how your body reacts to certain things or how you do with certain foods except you, which is actually why food freedom is such an individual process. Now, before we get into what food freedom is, what it looks like, and how to get there, I want to talk about a couple of things that food freedom is not. So, food freedom is not doing the Whole 30 forever, or every other month, or doing the Whole 30 every time you feel like you fall off the proverbial wagon, or go on vacation, or have a birthday where you eat a little too much chocolate cake. I had a reader write into me a couple of months ago, and she said that the Whole 30 is the only time in my entire life that I've felt free from food. And maybe I do it more than I should, but I keep doing it because I keep learning, and I remain optimistic that one day, building off everything that I've learned and all of my efforts will lead to food freedom. It's worth saying that this person was also doing a lot of mindset work and going to therapy and working a lot of self-care in order to help her find her food freedom. But here's a point that I want to hit on. There are a lot of people that think they just keep going back to the Whole 30 because they feel really good and they continue to learn things about themselves. And this is amazing. But here is the thing with this statement. If you just live in Whole 30 land forever, you're never going to learn how to deal with the foods that are off the program. If you use the Whole 30 to reset every single time you want to go to restaurant week or on vacation or enjoy some pumpkin spice lattes or pumpkin bread because it's that season right now, or a holiday meal because there's going to be a lot of that coming up, you are not taking responsibility for your own food freedom. You're just using the Whole 30 as a crutch, and for some people, they do this so often that the Whole 30 becomes the only way that they know how to eat in order to feel good. And that is not the intention of the program, and that is not somewhere you want to get stuck in, because that is not sustainable or improving your relationship with food at all. Okay, back up, deep breath. So now that we know what not to do, aka not using the Whole 30 as a crutch, let's talk about how to actually work towards your food freedom. So what is food freedom, and what does it actually look like when you get there? And for most people, food freedom isn't really like a end-all be-all destination. It's more of a journey, if you think of it. It's something that you're constantly working at and working towards. And even when you get there, like, there is not really a thing, and you'll understand what I mean when I explain it more. So food freedom at its core is basically just eating with intention. It is making peace with food and your body. Just like the scale hopefully no longer controls you because you've hopefully realized that is a lying sack of crap like I did after my first Whole 30, and it literally only measures your relationship with gravity and the earth and not your self-worth or your happiness or your capabilities to be an amazing human being. The goal with food freedom is that food no longer controls you. There's no longer guilt or shame associated with food and no corresponding binge or restrict cycles. There are no good foods or bad foods. When I teach my nutrition clients, food freedom looks a little like this. Most of the time, We choose to eat the foods that make us feel our best. And then we leave a little wiggle room to eat foods that are more like indulgences, every once in a while, when they're truly worth it, even if they don't necessarily make you feel awesome. Because this does allow you that wiggle room so you don't feel so restricted, which is the goal of any sustainable food plan. We want to feel great most of the time, but not so restricted that you want to go off the walls and right back into that binge restrict cycle, or like you guys have heard me talk about before, the alternating seasons of Whole30 and then margarita season, which is basically a sugar-coated excuse to yo-yo diet and use the Whole30 to binge eat. But you know my feelings about that. But so when we do choose to eat these indulgent foods as part of food freedom, you enjoy every single bit of them without any guilt and without feeling like crap afterwards. Period. Mic drop. Basically drop the mic and leave. But here's the thing. This is the ideal situation. This is the there. This is what you're always constantly working towards. Does this happen 100% of the time? No. Does this happen 100% of the time for me? Absolutely not. Will it happen after one whole 30? Definitely not. So this is a constant work in progress. It's a complete trial and error process, and it's up to you to do the work. It's for your responsibility to figure out how this is going to work with your life and in the choices that you make. So repeat, this is work and it's not easy. But if it was easy, everyone would have food freedom, right? I mean, you hear that all the time. If it was easy, everyone would have it. Like if getting a six pack was easy, everyone would have it, which is true. Like, I mean, that's a horrible example because, like, obviously I don't care about having a six pack and you guys shouldn't either, at least as your end all be all goal. But with food freedom, it's hard. And just like doing the Whole30 is hard, you know, like this is not something that comes easy. And you kind of have to accept that there are going to be bumps in the road and you just need to take those as learning experiences, because I promise you, working on this and taking your responsibility in this is worth it, because not having your life, your happiness, and your self-worth controlled by food and your feelings about your body is so worth it. And I just want you to let that sink in. This is worth it. It is work. It is going to be worth it in the end. And luckily for you, I have this podcast and multiple other interviews of people who have found their Whole30 food freedom and tips to help you along the way too. And I'm even thinking of creating a group coaching program about this soon, so let me know if you would be interested in that. So now's where we do the deep dive. Let's go all deep and sweaty into this, or as we say in Harry Potter nerdy lingo, let's dive into the pensive and sift through our thoughts to find the best nuggets of knowledge and advice that will help us all towards food freedom. Because I just saw Harry Potter and the Cursed Child last week in New York City, so I'm on a little bit of a Harry Potter kick right now, but let's be honest, when am I not on a Harry Potter kick? Anyways, so food freedom. Food freedom actually starts during your Whole30. Heck, it even starts before you do your Whole30. At whatever point that you realize you're going to be doing this health thing, aka the Whole30, not just because you want to lose weight or fix how you're feeling after overindulging on vacation or whatever it is, but realizing that what you truly want to work towards is balance, towards no more guilt or shame around food, towards peace with your body and peace with food. Basically breaking up with calorie counting and macros of controlling your entire life and letting food and the scale determine your self-worth. That is what we're trying to get away from. So during your Whole30, the work towards food freedom really kicks in. You're noticing the foods that make you feel great, what doesn't make you feel great, and symptoms needing, like, this is what you experience at the beginning of the program. Basically, if you're experiencing a lot of detox or die-off symptoms at the beginning of the program, the severity of that is due to the foods that you were eating before you started the Whole30. Meaning there are some foods that you were eating before that don't necessarily agree with you. And we will find that out during reintroduction. And obviously you're going to find out the other foods that don't make you feel great during reintroduction on a more concentrated scale. Now, the other thing we need to do here is make sure we are getting out of the good foods versus bad foods mentality. This is an absolute key to finding your food freedom. Just because a food is not included on the Whole30 does not mean that it's a bad food or even an unhealthy food. And it does not mean that you should avoid those foods forever. Now, to solidify why I'm saying this, let's go back to the reason we avoid certain foods on the Whole30 in the first place. So back to the original program guidelines. The Whole30 is like pushing the reset button for 30 days on your health, your habits, and your relationship with food. We eliminate the foods that have the potential to wreak havoc on one or more of these areas, and then systematically reintroduce those foods after 30 days, one at a time, to see which ones can fit into your healthy lifestyle while still feeling great and enjoying your food choices. The key word in this sentence of why we eliminate certain foods on the Whole30 is potential. The foods we eliminate have the potential to wreak havoc on your health, your habits, and your relationship with food. So the program's intention is to help you discover healthier habits to improve your health and a healthier relationship with food. So again, like we said before, if you just rely on the program's strict guidelines forever, sure, you may be physically healthier than you were before, because let's be honest, we would all be healthier if we just stopped eating sugar and processed food, but you would also probably have no social life. You would have to be a Whole30 hermit reading ingredient labels for your entire life, and you're not fixing your relationship with food just by avoiding certain foods forever. It's basically like putting a Band-Aid on a problem, but not actually fixing it. So to find food freedom, you have to get to the root cause of why food has this hold over you in the first place. Are you stuck in a yo-yo dieting cycle and you've been there for 10 or 20 years? Why have you been stuck there? How is your relationship with food? What about your relationship with your body, your confidence, or your self-esteem? If those aren't great, you need to figure out why they're not great. What is the root cause of that? You need to do some deep digging here. Journaling helps, talking it out helps, whether it's a therapist or with a friend, or apparently with a podcast or a blog, because that really helped me too. So the first question that I got is, how do you leave the Whole30 without just going back to how you ate before? Reintroduction is written into the program for a reason. Reintroduction is so key to not just going back to how you ate before, to finding your food freedom. 1 million exclamation points here. Reintroduction is written into the program for a reason. Sure, it's called the Whole30, but I think it really should be called like the Whole40 or something, so people realize you have to do this part to do the thing right. But if we're being honest, Whole40 doesn't sound as great or as sustainable or attainable, I guess, as marketable as Whole30. So there's that too. Reintroduction is the only way you're going to be able to learn the lessons you take from the Whole30 and put those into an actionable plan for your food freedom. If you don't do reintroduction and you just eat all of the things on day 31, like your face planted into a pizza and a six-pack of beer and a birthday cake and all these things, how are you going to know whether it was the gluten, the dairy, the sugar, the alcohol, whatever it was that gave you all of those Charlie Sheen-style hangover symptoms the next day? So here's the thing. Again, this is so individual. I can tell you how I react to certain things, but I have no idea how you are going to react to certain things. And neither does your mom or your brother or your sister or your CrossFit coach or your yoga instructor or your Reiki master or whatever it is. Nobody knows how you are going to react to certain things but you. This is the whole point of the program. It's so individual. And again, it's your responsibility to figure this out for yourself. Someone else asked if I recommend the formal reintroduction plan or the quote, see if you want something, then try it plan. So if you've never done the Whole30 before, or if you've never done a proper reintroduction on the Whole30 in the way that it's laid out in the books, I would recommend you do that, because it's really helpful to test out all of these different food groups individually to see how you react to them. If you've done multiple reintroductions before and you know that you don't react well to, say, legumes or dairy, you can skip them if you want. You don't constantly have to reintroduce foods that you know don't make you feel good. So that's up to you. Now, talking about reintroduction, what kinds of symptoms are we looking for in reintroduction? So you want to look for changes in your digestion, in your sleep, your energy, your skin, maybe nasal or chest congestion, some mental clarity, look for brain fog, changes in anxiety or stress, headaches or dizziness, mood or behavior changes like depression, cravings, pain or inflammation, and of course, medical conditions or corresponding symptoms or maybe autoimmune flares or anything like that. And I wanted to list all of these because I got a bunch of questions on what if I don't have any symptoms, or is it possible to not have any food intolerances? Then how do I find food freedom? Like, am I not listening to my body enough? And first thing I want to say is if you don't have any symptoms and it's yes, it's possible to not have any food intolerances. If you don't have any, like, props to you, golf clap, I am jealous, right? Like, that is the dream. But that also kind of makes food freedom a little bit harder, because one of the ways that we figure out what foods are going to be best for us is, I mean, it's easy. If you negatively react to a food, then you can just leave that out for your food freedom. I mean, that's kind of a band-aid approach, right? If you react negatively to a certain food, there's probably a root cause there, whether it's some digestive issues or you do have like a mild allergy to a certain food, if you have, you know, celiac is an extreme example, but something like that. Or if you react to all carbohydrates or starchy foods, there might be a gut bacteria imbalance or something. But for example, if you have an obvious skin reaction to when you eat dairy, it's pretty easy to figure out, okay, maybe I shouldn't eat dairy all the time if these skin reactions are something that I care about containing. These symptoms are only one of the things that are going to help you decide what foods to include in your food freedom, what foods make you feel your best. So another factor that you can throw in here is how healthy are the foods that you want to include in your food freedom? So avoid the good and bad foods, avoid the morality, the guilt, shame here. Everyone knows that eating excessive amounts of sugar and processed food is not healthy. Does that mean that they have zero place in your diet ever? Not necessarily, but that call is up to you. So you need to figure out, again, making this list of foods, what are the foods that make me feel really good? If you don't react to any foods, start with the more positive side of things. Like, let's say for you, maybe eating things like salmon and avocado and sweet potatoes and rice, like those make you feel really, really good. Start building that list and figure out all of the foods that make you feel really good. And then once you're eating those foods most of the time, then when you eat other foods and you're like, ooh, that doesn't necessarily make me feel awesome, then you can figure out, okay, that's not a food I want to incorporate in my food plan every day. Maybe I only do it once a week or once every 2 weeks or something like that. And then another factor in here is, what are the foods that you enjoy eating that also help you make you feel your best, right? I mean, sure, like if you eat kale all the time and it makes you feel really good, but you hate the taste of kale, is it worth it? I mean, for me, no. You don't, like, every meal that you eat doesn't have to taste amazing. Some foods that you eat are just going to be nutritious and healthy and stuff like that. Like, I don't think anyone actually enjoys eating or drinking green juice that tastes like grass, but sometimes you just got to do it because it's got a lot of vitamins and stuff, you know? Should that be the majority of your diet? No, because food should be a source of enjoyment as well. But that can be another factor that helps. Now, on the other side of things, I got a lot of questions of, what if I react to all of the things? So a couple of thoughts here. If you legitimately react to all the things, there is definitely a root cause of something deeper that is going on. And I highly recommend that you work with a functional medicine practitioner, or you work with a naturopath or a nutritionist who is trained in looking at stool tests and blood work and food intolerance tests and all of these things, because there is definitely something going on if you react to every single food that you reintroduce on the Whole30. So I would look into that. If that's not in the cards right now for budgetary reasons or whatever it is, one thing that I would recommend you do is keep your food freedom for now, which will be evolving. Keep it mostly Whole30. And then what you can do is just relax the rules. And this is honestly how I recommend anyone starts with their food freedom journey. What you can do is just relax certain of the rules on the Whole30 that don't necessarily add in the dairy or the beans or the grains or the excess sugars or refined foods or processed foods or anything like that. But for example, one really easy thing to do is to relax the rules on the zero added sugar. For example, now you can eat regular bacon, or you can eat sausages that are made with grass-fed beef or pasture-raised pork or whatever it is, but might have a little bit of cane sugar in them, right? Like that's a really easy thing that you can do. It's not going to make your sugar dragon come out of the cave. It's not going to make your sugar cravings go insane and make you want all of these cakes and brownies and cookies and everything, because there's so little added sugar in there that it's not going to make that big of a difference. So that's the first thing that you can do. And then just start trying out different single foods that are really easy on the digestive system for most people, like white rice or maybe other things that I'm trying to think that aren't necessarily Whole30. I wouldn't recommend doing legumes or dairy if you're having severe digestive issues, because those can be gut irritants. But for some people, like oatmeal works really well as an easy on the stomach thing. Again, it depends on your symptoms, but the best thing you could do would be to look into working with a functional medicine practitioner and getting some testing done. Because if you react to everything, there's probably something deeper going on. The next most common question that I got was, some people's version of food freedom is staying like 90% compliant or doing the 80-20 rule. So what does that actually look like in practice? So, like I was saying before, most of the time, this looks like eating the foods that make you feel your best, which again, you're going to figure out during your Whole30 and during reintroduction, and you should be making that list if you haven't already. Most of the time, you're going to eat those foods on that list. And for a lot of people, these are mostly Whole30 foods. But you're also going to find that there are some people who don't actually do well with foods that are on the Whole30, like maybe nuts or eggs or nightshade vegetables and spices if you have autoimmune issues. And there are also people that do completely fine with foods that aren't Whole30, like beans or dairy. And this is the beauty of food freedom, because it's different for everyone. So figuring out your 90-10 or your 80-20 or whatever you decide that to be, start with the foods that make you feel your best. You've got to figure out what those are. And then in reintroduction, you're going to figure out, okay, these are the foods that don't make me feel awesome. And there's going to be varying degrees of awesome slash not awesome here, right? So for example, you could have someone that reacts so severely to gluten or dairy or legumes or soy or whatever it is that they are like bedridden or feel like absolute crap. Like they'll be able to tell you, you know, those are things that you probably want to avoid most of the time, if not indefinitely. For example, with celiac, like gluten is something that you have to avoid forever. But gradually over time, you might figure out that you're healing up your gut and you can tolerate certain foods better. So for example, now in my food freedom, I'm able to incorporate things like rice and feel fine, and certain kinds of dairy and feel fine, and hummus and feel fine. And that's great, because that's basically for me a way to relax the rules. But none of those things like set my sugar dragon off or make me go crazy, and I'm not going to eat like 12 bowls of white rice, because overindulging in anything like that is not going to make you feel awesome, right? And so the 80-20 or the 90-10, the 10 and the 20 there, those are up to you to figure out. And another question that I got was like, how often is too often to indulge without waking up your sugar cravings or something like that? And that is something that is so individual, I cannot give you the answer to that. For some of my clients in practice, what the 80-20 or the 90-10 looks like is during the week, they eat mostly their feel-good foods, right? And that's usually a lot of vegetables. You're including some fruits in there, lots of healthy protein, healthy fat, starches around their workouts, whatever makes them feel their best. And then on the weekends, or maybe it's a random Tuesday night and it's your birthday or whatever it is, you choose when you get to have those indulgences. And the important thing here is like you choose things that are truly worth it. For example, if you are in Belgium or something and you are surrounded by like this amazing artisan chocolate or something, for me, that is so much more worth it than like having a Hershey bar in the middle of a Tuesday, because Hershey for me does not taste very good. I don't like milk chocolate. And just the obvious comparison of those two things are so far apart that like if say my godmother who is Belgian, she brings some chocolate back from home and it's the most delicious chocolate and I only get to see her, it's the middle of a Wednesday and that's all she has, of course I'm going to eat it, right? And I'm going to enjoy every single bit of that. but a lot of people will choose to have these on the weekends. I want to make a point here. This is not a cheat meal or a cheat day or something like that. And I would highly encourage you to avoid that verbiage, because what is cheating at the root? It's doing something wrong, right? You cheat on a test, you cheat on a spouse or a significant other, which is what we like. It's a really bad thing, right? And it's not a bad thing to indulge in foods that you truly enjoy. And there shouldn't be guilt or shame around that. And that just by using the word cheat meal or cheat day or cheat weekend, you're already invoking those feelings of guilt and shame, even if it's on a subconscious level. So we need to get away from that the same way we need to get away from the good and bad foods. So that 10 or that 20 or whatever it is in the 90-10, 80-20, that's up to you. You need to figure out what foods are going to make you feel good, right, most of the time. And then the other indulgences that you choose, you don't want to go into the overindulgence phase where your sugar cravings are setting off. You're starting to feel like crap, like digestively, or your sleep is off, or all these things. Once you start to see those symptoms pop up again that we're trying to avoid, that's when you've gone over with too many of the, whether they be indulgences or foods that don't make you feel your best. And then what you can do instead of doing a whole 30 reset is go back to your list of foods that make you feel your best and just do that most of the time. That's what I call moderation. And that's how I got from being an abstainer to mostly a moderator. Speaking of abstainers, the next question I got was, I don't want to reintroduce because I feel so good. And this is super, super common for people that are abstainers, from Gretchen Rubin. If you haven't taken the personality test, I will put it in the show notes. You need to do it. So like I was saying before, if you don't want to reintroduce because you feel so good, let's try just relaxing the rules, right? You don't have to reduce everything or really anything if you don't want to, but be cautious of using the whole 30 as a crutch, like I mentioned before, because again, if you do that, you're never going to learn how to deal with the foods that are not included on the program. Now, there's a difference between just not reintroducing anything at all and reintroducing a bunch of things and realizing that they don't work well for you, right? Like those are two completely different places. And you want to be right in the middle there. You want to reintroduce some foods that you really miss or you are curious of how you do with them, because you really want to incorporate those foods back in your life. You don't want to just stay on this extremely strict food plan forever, because again, it's only supposed to be a whole 30. It's not called a whole 100 or whole 180 or whole 365. And you guys have probably heard me say this 365 times, but there's a reason that it's called the whole 30, because it's supposed to be for 30 days, a reset on your health, your habits, and your relationship with food. And then you reintroduce things to see how you do with them. Okay, next one. Oh, perfect. Speaking of this, I'm an abstainer and not a moderator. How in the world do I get to a point where I can eat in moderation, like one cookie instead of all of them? This is hard. This is where the work comes in. The way that you get there is by doing all of the tips that I've been saying, right? Make these feel-good food lists, make the list of foods that don't make you feel so great. It's these bumps in the roads. This, more than anything, when you're getting to food freedom, is a trial and error process. It's practice. It's failing. It's determination to keep going even when you hit those bumps in the road. Constant vigilance, if you're talking to Mad-Eye Moody. God, I like just crack myself up with these Harry Potter quotes that just roll into my head. But yeah, this is not an easy thing. And you're not going to switch from being an abstainer to being a moderator in one whole 30 or two or three. Like I said before at the beginning of this podcast, it's taken me probably 5 years to get to where I am today. And I'm pretty sure Melissa Hardwig said it took her like 7 or 8 whole 30s to finally get to her place of food freedom. And that's worth saying too, is everyone's food freedom looks completely different. And no one should tell you how your food freedom should look, whether you should include chocolate chip cookies or brownies or hummus or cheese or rice or whatever it is. Again, there are no good or bad foods. There are only foods that you attach good or bad to, right? Like, yes, we know that eating a lot of excess sugar and processed foods is going to make us feel like crap. Those foods are unhealthy. Does it mean that they are bad foods? No. It just means that we shouldn't include them all the time, because we know that they're going to advance the disease process, if nothing else, and probably make you feel like crap. So we want to stay away from those. All right. Is it possible to have food freedom while trying to lose weight? Is it okay to still have weight loss goals after resetting your relationship with food and the scale? Yes, and I am so glad you asked this, because if you have truly reset your relationship with food and the scale, you're no longer approaching weight loss from a place of hating your body and wanting to change it because you want to make it quote unquote better or more attractive or more worthy of love and acceptance. You can still love your body and want to change it at the same time, and there's nothing wrong with that, and you shouldn't feel guilty about it. Next one. Do you have any tips for mindful eating, especially when you're eating alone or at a desk? Yes. Stop distracting yourself when you're eating. And I am totally guilty of this because I hate silence. So even though I live by myself, right? And so for most of my meals, if I'm not eating out with friends, or I'm not at a coffee shop, or I'm not, you know, wherever I am, I'm basically eating by myself. You know, Bella's watching me, but that doesn't really count because she's not talking back when I'm talking to her. But so what you want to do is make sure you're not distracted eating. For example, don't eat while you're watching TV or checking your email or reading the news. Especially don't eat while you're doing things that stress you out. For example, driving. Or don't eat while you're standing up. So a really good place to start with this is the book Intuitive Eating by Evelyn Tribol, which I'll link in the show notes. But for mindful eating, you don't have to choose your food 50 times, right? I mean, that's a place to start, right? You definitely want to focus on chewing your food more. Go in a situation where you are sitting down, not standing up, because when you're standing up, your body is not prepared to produce all of the stomach acid and the digestive enzymes, and you're not entering the rest and digest nervous system mode that you need in order to actually digest and assimilate all of your food. And assimilate, this basically means you can eat your food, but if you're not truly assimilating it, meaning digesting it and getting all of the nutrients out of that food into your body, it's basically like you didn't even really eat the food. So not worth it. So mindful eating, again, stay away from distracted eating. Sometimes I'll listen to a podcast, but if I do that, if I need to make sure that I'm really concentrating on eating the food, on actually chewing my food, on tasting the food, instead of just letting my mind wander to like a million other things that I should be doing or my to-do list or whatever it is. Because when you are more mindful eating, you are going to be more in tune with your body's hunger signals, with your satiation signals, with your taste signals. Here's a good example. If you are sitting down on the couch and watching The Real Housewives or 24 or whatever your favorite show is, you can easily polish off an entire Costco-sized bag of popcorn without realizing what's happening when your hand hits the bottom of the bag. Now, I don't know what size your Costco popcorns are, but like ours are pretty big here. But if you are sitting by yourself or maybe listening to a podcast or whatever it is, and you are concentrating on chewing and tasting the food that you're eating, you will definitely not get through the entire bag of popcorn in the same way you would because you're so distracted sitting in front of the TV. So that's just a example that will hopefully help you with your mindful eating. Do I have any recommendations on food freedom when it comes to people who tend to overeat? So this is where the mindset piece of this comes in. So you want to think about, why are you overeating? Is it because you're hungry? Are you bored? Are you emotional? Are you stressed? Are you thirsty? This also goes back to the mindful eating piece. A lot of people who overeat, it's because they're distracted when they're eating, or they're not taking the time to actually chew their food, or they're rushing through it, or you're not really listening to your body's hunger signals, right? I mean, we've all heard the statistic that it takes, you know, between 15 to 20 minutes for your body to actually process that it's full. So if you just rush through that, like if you blow through a meal in 10 minutes because you need to be somewhere, or you're stressed, or you're just eating in front of the TV and you're just, you know, shoving the food in your mouth, basically, even if you eat more than your body needs, you're not going to realize it until 10, 20 minutes later. And you're going to be like, okay, now I'm full and I shouldn't have eaten that fast. So eat slower, deep dive and digging into why you're overeating. And again, this is one of those things that might not be comfortable to think about, but this is worth the work, I promise. Wow, we have a lot more questions here. All right. Okay, we're only at 35 minutes. We're going to keep going. Let's see. I know sugar is one of my foods with no breaks. So how do you reintroduce added sugar? This is a really good question. So the first way that I introduce sugar on any reintroduction is just by, again, like I was saying before, by relaxing those rules. So for example, having sugar in your bacon or in sausage, or allowing some sugar in salad dressings that you buy, or adding a little bit of honey to something that you're making. That's the easiest way to add in sugar without the detrimental effects of waking up your sugar dragon. Now, there is going to be a point when it's Halloween or it's the holidays or it's your birthday or whatever it is, and you want to have that cupcake or that cake or that brownie or that cookie or whatever it is. And here is where it's going to get really hard, because sugar is as addicting as crack. It's been shown in studies that mice, if they are given Oreos versus cocaine, they will go for the Oreos. And it's just because of all of the different dopamine, the serotonin receptors, and everything in your brain. Those are hormones and neurotransmitters, if you don't know what those are, that regulate your mood. And it's just, sugar is really hard. And that's actually a good thing to keep in mind, because sugar is hard for everyone. It's not like there are some people that are just like, oh, like I can eat a whole cake and be fine. Like, no, that doesn't happen. Even for me, who I'm much more of a savory person than a sweet person, like I would rather have a bag of chips than like a bag of cookies, because I don't feel great after I eat the bag of cookies. But if it's like salty and fatty, I'm like, oh, give me all the things. But even for me, sugar is really hard. When you start to reintroduce sugar on a consistent basis into your diet, those cravings are going to come back. And that's when you need to have the self-awareness of, oh, this is not working that well for me. Maybe I should pull back on this. So reintroducing added sugar is just going to kind of happen at some point. But the key is here, when you have that cookie or that piece of cake or whatever it is, don't let it turn into 12 cookies or the entire sheet cake or whatever it is, just because you're now allowing yourself to have some. My advice here would be to make sure you're actually chewing your food and you actually enjoy every bite of what you're eating, because then you're going to be much more likely to be satiated by that food and having actually enjoyed that indulgence. You won't feel the need to eat 12 or 16 or whatever it is cookies that are in the box or at the bakery or whatever it is, because you're going to start to get palate fatigue is what happens with real foods, is you're going to get tired of eating that food. I mean, you'll notice like the first bite of whatever you're eating is always the best one. And then you'll realize like every other bite after that tastes the same, even if it's really good, right? So if you're paying attention to your food, you're going to be much less likely to overeat. Let's see. How do you do this, meaning go for food freedom and reintroduction, when for years you've binged and been in the binge restrict cycle? Ooh, what a great question. Okay, this is work. This is what we've been talking about basically this whole time. My first thing here would be figure out why you are restricting, because your restriction is the cause of your binges. So we need to figure out, do you have this morality attached to certain foods? Are you restricting because you're trying to fit your body into a certain societal mold? And that sounds very profound, but you guys know exactly what I mean. Do you have yes, no lists of foods? Do you have lists of good and bad foods? Are you only trying to eat those quote unquote good foods when you're restricting? And then when you binge, is it because you're not allowing yourself to have any of those quote unquote bad foods when you're restricting? That is usually the case, because you only have so much willpower and you only have so much capacity for stress. And usually the binges happen when you are emotional, when you're stressed, when you have a bunch of shit going on and you just can't do the restriction anymore. But here's the thing, is once you get to food freedom, you don't feel the pull of these restrictions anymore, because you realize that you're choosing to eat the foods that make you feel really good most of the time, but you're still allowing yourself to have other foods if you want them. But you'll realize you're choosing not to have those foods most of the time because they don't make you feel good. And that is something that you need to work towards. Again, this is work. This is not easy. It's hard to get out of the binge restrict cycle. I will say this is not something that I would recommend you do on your own. I would work with, again, a functional medicine practitioner. Words are hard today, you guys. I would work with a nutritionist or someone that specializes in disordered eating or eating disorders. There's so many people out there. Getting into this too, you want to get out of that negative space of self-talk. You need to stop telling yourself you're bad because you binged. You need to stop telling yourself you're being good because you're only eating certain foods. You need to stop talking negatively about your body. You need to stop talking negatively about other people's bodies. You need to get out of any situation, whether that's on social media or TV or magazines or the internet or around people that have these toxic body ideals that you need to fit into a certain size in order to be worthy. You need to get away from that. Otherwise, you are never going to get out of the binge restrict cycle. And it's a lot of self-help and work and working with other people. Again, like I said before, talking this out is so important and figuring out why you're stuck in that binge restrict cycle in the first place. That's going to be the first step in getting out of there. Ooh, that was a big soapbox. How do you remind yourself in food freedom that the consequences of a not worth it for food are really not worth it? This is kind of a tough one. So, I guess I could go with an example. So for me, I used to love cheesecake, but for me, that's a not worth it food now. And this is kind of an easy one for me because now if I eat cheesecake, even if it's, you know, gluten-free, for my system, that's just too much dairy and I am not going to feel good afterwards. And I think it's the combination of the dairy and a ton of sugar in that cheesecake because it is basically a sugar cheesecake, right? I mean, it's in the word. It's a cake of cheese. And cake means there's a lot of sugar. So this is a trial and error process too because not worth it foods, you're only going to learn through trial and error. And that, unfortunately, is something that you're going to have to learn for yourself. But you will learn based on how you feel after eating those foods. Going back to that checklist of symptoms that we're looking for during reintroduction, does this affect you on a digestive level, on your sleep, on your cravings, which is the more likely option here? Is it your skin, your mood, your anxiety, your stress? If it impacts you on multiple of those levels in a really negative way, it's probably a not worth it food, but that is something that you need to figure out for yourself. Next question, only a couple more here. I need help figuring out the right portions for me and macro balance. Any tips? You guys are going to get mad at me for this answer, but I cannot tell you what the right portions for you are because I don't know anything about you. And I can't tell you what the best macro balance is because again, I don't know anything about you or your background, your health history, or your goals. Or the foods that make you feel your best. So, but in general, tips for helping figure out what portions work right for you. So if you eat breakfast and you are hungry an hour later, you didn't eat enough food. If you eat breakfast and you're not hungry for 8 hours, you probably ate too much food. So a sweet spot that I find for most of my clients is if you can go between 3 and 5 hours without being starving, then that was a good meal size for you. In terms of the macronutrient balance, that's something that you need to play around with because some people will feel really good eating higher fat and lower carb, and other people will feel really good eating higher carb and lower fat. And some people will feel really great if they're just kind of balanced with all of the macronutrients. In terms of blood sugar regulation and stability and mood and stress, I find for most of my clients that eating not super low carb, but, you know, moderate carb intake and higher fat and moderate protein. And I'm not going to give you any specific numbers here because you need to figure those out for yourself. I find that that works the best in terms of general health. Now, This is not something that you'll be able to figure out with overnight. One thing you can do is play around with different macronutrient ratios. So say like for a month or something, you try going more higher fat and lower carb. And then for another time, you try going higher carb and lower fat and see how you feel and see what makes you feel your best. And basically trial and error is the only way that you're going to be able to figure this out. Okay, next one. I understand the foods that make me feel bad. For this person, it's gluten and alcohol, he says. But people still try to peer pressure me into eating those foods or drinking those things. So I have said this before and I will say it again. You are the only person who's going to stick up for you and your health and your goals and how you feel and all of these things. And the second thing is like situations like this, whether you're in a group of friends or you're with your family or on the holidays, and this is going to be so present in the next couple of months, when people are trying to peer pressure you into doing things, it's usually projections of their own insecurities. For example, if you go out and you're not drinking or you're not eating, let's see, it's Oktoberfest right now, you're not eating pretzels or whatever it is, because you're making, because you're making that decision. Okay, we're back. Because you're making that decision of not to indulge in those foods or those drinks with other people that are around, they are automatically internalizing your decision not to eat something as a judgment on that they are eating or drinking those things, even though that's not even on your radar at all. Even if it's not, even if it is. That's what they're thinking. They're like, oh, he or she is doing this because they think it's healthier, so they must think I'm unhealthy. And they're wondering why you are no longer indulging with them or imbibing with them or whatever it is. And this isn't something that you can control. So the best thing that you can do is just say, I don't want to drink today, or I don't want to have that today because it doesn't really make me feel great. And if they're like, oh, like you'll just be fine. Like what if you just have one or if you just have a bite? You just have to be insistent and stand up for yourself, because people are always going to be assholes about something like that, especially if they are taking what you're doing as a threat to their own decision making. Because if they're now feeling insecure that they're doing something unhealthy or whatever it is, they're going to start to lash out a little bit. And that's not your fault at all. You just have to take the high road. And this can be really hard sometimes, but in my experience, a really good way to get rid of people like this is to say, well, if I eat the pretzel, I'm probably going to poop my pants. So if you'd rather, you know, hang out with me then, okay, let's do this. Probably don't want to go down that route. But, you know, if someone's being super insistent, you can always just say, I'm going to feel like crap if I eat that and I don't feel like feeling like crap today. So, you know, people are generally pretty accepting of that, but you could always go the poop your pants route if they don't accept it. Okay, last one. My big non-scale victory was almost no period pain. How do I reintroduce if it takes a full month to see the effects? This is a really interesting question. A lot of people actually notice changes in their menstrual cycle when they are doing a Whole30, which is super interesting, and I want to do more research on this. But no one's really doing research on Whole30 participants, so to be determined. But I find that the biggest factor in PMS symptoms for people on Whole30 is that they're eliminating all of the excess sugars and refined carbohydrates. Those are things that can definitely intensify the cramping and the pain that is associated with menstrual cycles. So I would start, like we were talking about before, with relaxing the rule on added sugar, and then being careful with adding in a ton of refined carbohydrates or processed foods, because those are the biggest culprits of period pain. And then just go along your reintroductions as usual, and hopefully your cycle will come around again before you've introduced a lot of sugar or a lot of processed foods or anything. And then you'll be able to see what the culprit is. So that is the food freedom episode for you guys. So I hope you enjoyed that. Get away from the good and bad foods. Get away from the shame and the guilt around food. Don't let food and how you feel about your body determine your self-worth or your happiness. And eat with intention to get to food freedom and accept that there are going to be a lot of bumps in the road, and it's okay and it is worth it. It will so be worth it. So if you guys enjoyed this episode, I would love it if you would go on iTunes and leave a 5-star review or rating for Real Talk with Dana, because you guys are the best. And this is how we're going to help spread the food freedom word, because there are so many people, as you guys know, that are just falling on and off the wagon with this whole 30 thing, and just with life in general, not even with the whole 30, like just with the constant cycle of yo-yo dieting that is constantly fueled by the media and social media, which is just a highlight reel of everyone's life. And you guys know my feelings on this, so I'll stop rambling. But I appreciate you guys for being here, and I'm going to continue to put out content like this. And again, I am thinking of doing a program about how to find your food and body freedom, to be determined when, probably after the holidays. But if you guys are interested in that, feel free to email me at realfoodwithdana@gmail.com, or you can DM me on Instagram at realfoodwithdana, and I will talk to you guys next week. Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends, and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes. And come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.